Hello and welcome to this bonus episode of the EMJ podcast. My name is George Cooper. I'm a medical writer, podcast host and producer, and I am very pleased to be bringing you a discussion on the new European Society of Hypertension guidelines for renal denervation as a treatment for uncontrolled hypertension. Throughout this episode, we will be exploring RDN as a treatment option for hypertension, recent changes to the ESH guidelines and what they could mean for your practice, and we'll look into which patients are best suited for RDN. Before we get started, a few housekeeping notes. This medical education activity is supported by Medtronic. Providing us with their insights and expertise today, I am delighted to introduce Professor Atul Patak, who works in the Department of Cardiovascular Medicine at Princess Grace Hospital in Monaco. He is also immediate past president of the French Society of Hypertension, past president of the European Society of Patient Care, and is currently a board member at the European Society of Hypertension. Professor Patak, it's a pleasure to have you with us today. How are you doing?
Fine, thank you. Thanks for having me on board.
Yeah, no worries. It's great to have you. We'd like to start our discussion today with some of the basics, just to provide an overview before we jump in. Could you please just provide a brief overview of renal denervation, or RDN as it's known, and how it functions as a treatment for uncontrolled hypertension?
Yeah, so the basics are quite simple. There is a statement that when you are having hypertension, there's an overactivity of a system we call the sympathetic nervous system. And basically, this system is mediated by the interconnection between the kidney and the brain. And this connection between the kidney and the brain is related to the presence of fibers, nerve fibers. We call them sympathetic nerve fibers. And the principle of renal denervation is to get rid of these fibers. How? By inserting a tiny catheter into the renal artery. And on the top of this catheter, you have the ability through energy, whether ultrasound or radio frequency energy, to destroy these tiny fibers, and by that disconnecting the kidney and the brain, and so reducing the activity of the sympathetic nervous system. And this has been associated with a reduction in blood pressure.
Is it a complicated procedure? It sounds incredibly intricate and sophisticated. Is it difficult to administer?
No, for an interventional cardiologist, it's quite a classical procedure. It's a procedure we call an interventional procedure. So you need to insert a tiny catheter into the femoral artery and go backwards up to the renal artery. In fact, the same way you will do an angiogram for coronary diseases, or you will do an angiogram for brain arteries, you will perform an angiogram of the renal arteries. And by doing that, you are able to treat the patient.
And is it a safe procedure? What can you share about the risks and benefits associated with renal denervation?
Yeah, it's pretty safe. I mean, the rate of complication in studies and in observational studies is similar to what you know whenever you do a procedure. So the good news is that the level of risk is the same as any interventional procedure. There are no added risk. You might have thought that by going into the renal artery, you could induce a renal complication. It's not the case. So let's say that the level of risk is similar to any procedure. And nowadays, these procedures are well controlled, so really safe.
Mm. And is the destimulation of the nerves that you speak of, is it, once it happens, is it permanent, or does the sensation in the nerves come back after a while? Do you need to repeat the treatment?
Very good question. So basically, when you perform renal denervation, you will destroy these fibers and you will interrupt the connection between the kidney and the brain. And studies doing the follow-up, at least the long-term follow-up of patients who have been treated with this therapy, shows that after 1, 2, 3 years, the benefit remains. So there is no further increase in blood pressure, showing that the therapy is still working. And we even had recently data from teams in Australia or in Germany, where the follow-up is as long as 7, 8, or 9 years. And again, showing that there is a long-lasting effect of the therapy and that you don't need to re-perform the therapy.
Quite incredible. Before we had renal denervation, what were the primary treatment options available for patients with uncontrolled hypertension?
Yeah, before renal denervation, you had the classical approach offering patients what we call lifestyle modification, controlling their weight, reducing the amount of salt you are eating, not smoking, reducing the amount of alcohol, trying to reduce your body weight, try to move further. So lifestyle modification, the first pillar in the management of these patients with hypertension. Second, using drugs. And there are a huge number of drugs which can be used to control elevated blood pressure in our hypertensive patient. And let's say that renal denervation could be considered as a third pillar in the management of hypertension. So after lifestyle modification and drug therapy.
I see. And as recent as last summer, so June 2023, there were new hypertension guidelines that were presented at the European Society of Hypertension. Can you discuss the key changes in the guidelines that related specifically to renal denervation?
Yeah, this was, I think, one of the key points in these recently published guidelines. Let's make it very simple. Renal denervation can be offered to hypertensive patients who are uncontrolled, whether despite treatment, so they are not controlled while they are receiving drugs, but also uncontrolled because they are not willing to take drugs or they are experiencing side effects to drugs. Second, renal denervation needs to be offered in patients where you don't have any issues regarding their kidney, so what we call clearance of creatinine, which is a marker to assess that the kidneys are working well, should be above 40 milliliters per minute. Third, renal denervation should be put in hand of experts. So you need to be trained and you need to be part of a multidisciplinary center where the case of a patient who will be referred for renal denervation would have been assessed by specialists and treated by experts. And last but not least, this option should be shared with patient in the process we call shared medical decision and take into account also patient preferences. And I think these are the four bullet points which are summarizing these new guidelines published recently.
And what do these new updated guidelines mean for fellow cardiologists for their practice? How do you foresee the guidelines changing the way that people go about treating?
That's important because we see a kind of shift in our practice for a couple of reasons. First, because there have been trials not able to convince the community about the interest of using renal denervation for a hypertensive patient. And these guidelines summarizes 5 years of high level of evidence research showing 1 year after the other, that trials investigating renal denervation are positive and showing that patients who are treated with renal denervation will have their blood pressure control or at least will have their blood pressure in a better situation. So bulk of evidence showing that the therapy works, a reasonable low level of side effects, an available techniques which can be brought up to our patient in these expert centers. And I think last but not least, the possibility to treat a huge amount of patients who are totally different from the uncontrolled patients who are receiving three or more drugs to those who are not taking any pills and do not wish to be treated or experience side effects with drugs. So a wide panel of patients who could be offered the therapy in expert hands with the bulk of evidence are really reshaping the way we are treating our hypertensive patients.
You mentioned there a shift in the attitude and acceptance around, this procedure. Do you feel that happening? Do you feel it is becoming more accepted and becoming higher up in your fellow physicians, go-to procedures in order to help uncontrolled hypertension?
I think it's important. There was always a delay between innovation, education, and practice. So I think we are at a stage where we are working hard to educate our fellows and physicians who are working around us. But let's say that the pathway organization, renal denervation is available in expert centers. The way guidelines are supporting the development of the technique and us educating our fellow physicians are really allowing us to see an increase in the number of patients who are treated with the therapy. And this is going really fast and faster since the therapy got approval by the FDA in the United States. And there is not a single week where you don't see an announcement on LinkedIn or on X showing that there are now patients who are commercially treated. I'm not talking about research. I'm not talking about academic centers. I'm talking into what's happening into clinical practice. So it's really now taking up and it's really taking off.
Well, it's great to hear. And just from your experience, I know you touched upon a few in relation to the updated guidelines, but what types of patients, for example, you said, you know, patients who don't like or want to take pills, but are there any types of patients that you feel are suitable candidates for renal denervation? And what are the sort of specific criteria in addition to the patient types that you've already covered that determine eligibility?
Yeah, I think the process is quite simple. First, you need to exclude patients who have what we call secondary hypertension. So hypertension caused by other diseases, because these patients have been excluded in trials and the level of evidence that the therapy will work in this patient is very low. Second, you will try to treat this patient with lifestyle modification and drug therapy, but also at this time share with them the options of having them treated with renal denervation. Then you will do a follow-up, and if these patients are not controlled, you could refer them for renal denervation. But there are some important points. The anatomy should be suitable. You cannot perform renal denervation in patients with tiny arteries, calcified arteries. Second, you need to be sure that your patient is having elevated blood pressure. And last, I think it's important to mention that the technique needs also to be put in expert hands. And you might use sometimes a biological or clinical indicator allowing you to identify those who could be good responders to the technique. This is a very important point, because when you look at the data, there is a huge variability in the effect of the procedure. There are some patients who are great responders, and there are some patients who are low responders or not responding at all. Their blood pressure is not at all modified by renal denervation. Up to now, we don't have biomarkers allowing us to identify who would be the right candidate, who would be the good responders. But we know, for example, that patients with elevated heart rate, with high renin, patients who are young, patients with elevated sympathetic tone, are usually those who will respond well to the technique. So beyond the classical assessment of hypertension, after excluding patient with secondary hypertension, if the anatomy of these patients is suitable, you could offer renal denervation, knowing that there are some clinical parameters who can enhance the quality of recruitment for this patient.
I understand. And just from your experience, your vast experience in your practice, do you have any case studies for a patient who is, you know, has uncontrolled hypertension and which RDN has worked and has been, you know, a fantastic treatment for them and effectively really helped their prognosis? Any spring to mind of the kind of the ideal candidate and where this procedure has really worked?
Yeah, well, I think I would have loved to tell you a story which is like a crazy story with the patient uncontrolled and he got the procedure and suddenly he's cured, okay? But this wouldn't be fair. But let's put it in different words. I think for me, what was astonishing was first that you are able to control patients where you thought there were patients where nothing was working on them. Well, basically, most of the time, these patients were those who were not taking their pills. And you would assume that they had a very severe disease and that this disease required you to add up 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 drugs. So once we offered renal denervation, first, we knew that the patient had the therapy, because that's something you can never be sure about when you are prescribing drugs. Second, we saw significant drop of blood pressure, which is the equivalent of what a single or at least 2 drugs would do on a patient. So I could wean off some patients from their drugs. I could optimize control of blood pressure in others. And whenever we have performed this therapy, we were surprised by the blood pressure lowering effect of the therapy from very high responders, so patients where we could stop all the drugs, 20, 30 millimeters of mercury of decrease, to patients with less amplified reduction in blood pressure, but you could still optimize blood pressure control and sometimes stop one drug.
It's quite incredible. And I think for hypertension, it seems to be the perfect solution, because obviously you totally eliminate any need for or any errors with patient adherence. It's just you have the procedure and then the effects are prolonged. So, I mean, would it be fair to say it's the future of hypertension care, would you say, given the patient categorization and the requirements? Taking those into account, would you say it's the future of hypertension treatment?
Yeah, and I would say to a broader extent, it's the future of cardiovascular prevention. We are having now lipid-lowering drugs which can be prescribed at least every month, and in a couple of months, you will have these new drugs which can be prescribed every 6 months. This is also the case probably for new drugs in the field of hypertension, and renal denervation really fits into that. A single procedure with a long-lasting effect, low level of side effects, aiming to reduce the burden of pills and sometimes optimizing blood pressure control. So you are absolutely right. It fits with the checklist of what patients expect from us for the future management of their hypertension and more generally for cardiovascular prevention.
You mentioned earlier that the therapeutic effect is sustained for a long time and you see those positive benefits. Are there any long-term considerations that one must consider before proceeding with the procedure in terms of any particular negative long-term effects that may come, you know, on the horizon further down the line that you're aware of from the data that there is already?
Yeah, that's a good question, because whenever you disrupt a system, you might ask yourself, okay, am I not doing something which will be missing for my patient in the future? But what we know is that by destroying these tiny fibers, we never experienced any side effects which was related to this interventional approach. There was a time, almost 60, 70 years ago, where you would surgically remove these type of fibers. And this gross approach was inducing a lot of side effects, orthostatic hypotension, erectile dysfunction, sometimes difficulties to perform an exercise. All these type of effects have not been seen by in patients who have been treated with renal denervation, because it's a selective approach where you are just destroying these tiny renal nerves, sympathetic fibers. Moreover, instead of seeing or fearing long-term side effects, we have seen long-term positive effects, long-term unexpected positive effects, because this therapy is not about only reducing blood pressure, it's about reducing, as I told you initially, the sympathetic nerve system activity. The sympathetic nervous system is a system which is releasing adrenaline, you know, the stress system. And by reducing the activity of the stress system, you are reducing the activity of elevated blood pressure, but you are also having a lot of potential collateral benefits in patients with arrhythmia, maybe tomorrow in patients with heart failure or chronic kidney disease. So not only is the therapy safe, and we do not fear any long-term side effects, but we are also hoping that the therapy could be used in other patients and be used beyond hypertension.
Wow. And just a question, I may be going a little off piste here, but can you foresee a future whereby RDN is used as a preventative measure for, say, a patient who has a genetic predisposition to hypertension, family history of cardiac disease? These types of patients are very high risk. Could you see that this could potentially be something that could prevent complications down the line in that kind of context? Obviously, I'm unaware of any trials that are happening, but is that the sort of thing that could happen?
Yeah, that's, I think, what we all want to be able to achieve, you know. The real concept of preventative medicine is to treat patients before they even had the disease. And it could particularly apply to renal denervation, because there have been trials showing that if you are able to modulate the activity of certain systems, you are able to sometimes avoid or at least retard the apparition of some diseases. So maybe in a future, it will be imaginable to see patients treated before they get the disease. And so we are talking about the timing of renal denervation. The only concern is that we don't have outcome studies. So we don't know if renal denervation is having an impact on morbidity and mortality. We assume that by reducing blood pressure, and there was a very strong correlation between blood pressure and outcomes. We know that when you reduce blood pressure, you reduce the risk of stroke or heart failure or of coronary event. So we assume that by reducing blood pressure with renal denervation, you could reduce the burden of the disease. But treating the patient at a very early stage would mean that you strongly believe that by doing that, by controlling the system, by reducing the activity of the sympathetic system, you might avoid hypertension. It's a plea, I would say. We hope that one day we'll be able to show that.
Amazing. And before we wrap up, first of all, thank you. It's been an incredibly enlightening discussion and one that I'm sure will benefit many, many cardiologists, HCPs, physicians the world over. If you were to give your key take homes, the pieces of advice and that you'd wish anyone listening today to take home into their back into their practice regarding these new guidelines and regarding RDN, what were the key take homes that you'd like them to remember?
I think first, manage your hypertensive patients in order to control their blood pressure and cardiovascular risk. For that, detect the patient at the early stage, involve and empower the patient, and offer him the classical approach, which is lifestyle modification and drug therapy. Second, be aware that there is now a third pillar for the management of hypertension, which is a procedure called renal denervation, that this procedure is safe when it's done by expert hands and is able to reduce blood pressure in a significant way, in a clinically meaningful way, in order to optimize blood pressure control in hypertensive patients and in order sometimes to normalize blood pressure. Last, this approach should be offered to patients who have been extensively assessed by experts, so exclusion of secondary causes of hypertension, assessment of the anatomy of renal artery, in order to enhance the quality of care and reduce the burden of elevated blood pressure and cardiovascular risk. These patients being patients who are entering into the disease with mild to moderate hypertension, treated or not treated, or sometimes more complicated hypertensive patients who are difficult to control despite two or three antihypertensive drugs.
Professor Atul Patak, thank you so much for your time today and for sharing your insights and expertise. It's been a real pleasure speaking with you.
Thank you very much, George.
And that concludes today's discussion. If you enjoyed this episode, please don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. We release a new episode every Friday, as well as plenty of bonus episodes like this one. Until next time, take care and goodbye for now.